From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the sixth day of November 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll check in on the president's trip overseas as it's related to China and some of the Asian trade, along with some of the updates that we've been hearing about NAFTA and the impact it might have on the U.S. economy and how trade might ensue if the president were to pull the United States out of the trade agreement. We'll also check in on the weather forecast that with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. The folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County should join us to take a look at the cash grain market. And I'll ask you to buy your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference that's coming up the 21st of this month. Don't wait. Do it right now. Willag.org, 1-800-898-1065, farmassetsconference.com. Illinois Public Media, it's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're 2 weeks away now, 3 weeks, I guess, away from, 2 weeks away now from the Farm Assets Conference, and a day, that is, which will take place in Normal, Illinois at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. If you've not scheduled yourself to be there yet, I know you're busy. Many of you to the north and to the east are still in the field, but do take some time, 800-898-1065 or online willag.org to get your tickets purchased. It's not a day you'll want to miss. One of the people that'll be there, one of our seven analysts, is Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and joins us online now. Hey, thanks. We appreciate you being with us today, Kurt.
Well, glad to be here, Todd. Thank you.
So I want to start not with the grains and the oil seeds, because I think it may be that the energies are a bit more interesting for the day. They've been rallying quite a little bit on what's been happening in Saudi Arabia, and then the Trump administration over the week, the president, in fact, talking a little bit about Saudi Arabia and it issuing, hopefully, what Mr. Trump hopes will be in New York, a brand new way to trade. Can you tell me about what's happening there and your thoughts as how it relates, maybe, if at all, to the rest of the marketplace?
Well, the energy complex has been a rally in the making for quite some time. When you go back to last summer's trade, we had some good consolidation. The market formed a head and shoulders bottom on the chart. So if you're looking at some chart formations, there's a picture-perfect illustration right there. But it goes back to the hurricane activity we saw. We saw some reaction from that. Then inventory reports over time have been showing quite a drawdown in gasoline stocks. So the RBOB's just virtually been the leader to the upside here. And whenever you have a product like that taking over ownership and leadership, it's created some enthusiasm. As far as the crude oil, we were in a situation where $55, $54 a barrel has been a barrier. Technicians drew a line at $56 a barrel. We're above that, so that's generated some additional speculative buying. Trend following devices have been, on the buy side in through here. And so technically and fundamentally, both we've been fairly strong. Saudi Arabia also, too, we saw a helicopter go down with some key officials in it. Also, there's talk about some corruption in Saudi Arabia. Then Iran supposedly had a missile that was supposed to be pointed towards one of the airports in Saudi Arabia, and that did not pan out. But Saudi Arabia is in a position maybe with that event taking place that that's sort of an act of war. So there's quite a few things floating out there, along with the items you mentioned there, to give reason for the energy market here to remain firm here as we go through this first full trading week of November time.
Does it mean much, if anything, for the commodity markets? And by that, I mean grains and oil seeds in general.
Well, I think it goes back to the couple of old-time sayings, a rising tide floats all ships. And if you go back to the big bull markets that we've seen in the past, it was somewhat energy-led. Also, too, investor confidence. Whenever you see some confidence on the investment side, it frees up additional investment money in general. And then, too, consumer confidence. Whenever you look at the stock market and returns and so forth, it creates additional purchasing and also more state consumption or more gasoline consumption. Now, we will get to a point, though, if this gasoline does continue to move higher, you might start reading or seeing articles about maybe a slowdown in holiday travel. But it's going to be the holidays, and they need to get those inventories replenished in the areas that used up those stocks here in September and have those replenished for holiday travel time.
Soy Complex managed to pick up some gains in all three parts, the oil, the meal, and soybeans were up 7 cents. Nice turnaround after a rough day Friday.
Yeah, leadership in the soybean complex seems to be the bright side. It seems like they're wanting to buy beans, sell corn, buy beans, sell wheat. Funds are estimated to be long, over 35,000 contracts of beans. The cotton pickers are short 201,000 corn and 109,000 contracts of wheat. So hopefully someday they'll reverse that spread. Chinese bean business should remain strong as we move towards the end of the weekend here. Looking at the WASDE reports and so forth, we expect overall bean demand to China to hang in through there. Also, too, some of the private guys came out here late last week and did not raise the bean yield. So we're looking for the supply-demand balance sheet on Thursday morning. Maybe just be a little tighter on the bean sector there. As far as the corn numbers go, corn continues to struggle here. Corn harvest is expected to be just 65% complete as a nation, so we still have quite a bit of corn to digest. Where bean harvest this afternoon is expected to be 90% complete, so bean harvest is almost done, whereas we still have some corn out there to come to town, and that's kind of keeping a lid on the futures here as guys try to wrap up harvest in the northern third of the U.S.
You've been talking, I'm sure, with your producers. Where are they lagging behind most in the Midwest, in your opinion, and how soon do they think they can get it all in?
Well, that's a good question. The eastern belt here, man, they just got hammered overnight, not only with wind, but with quite a bit of moisture. So it's going to be slow going. Some guys said it'd be 4 or 5 days before they get back in the field. So it's just going to be strung out through here. Don't get too down on down corn. There's guys in Nebraska had tremendous amount of wind, tremendous amount of down corn, but they were able still to get it up off the ground, and it was yielding still 265 bushels to the acre. So there could be some slight yield loss. It could be some quality issues. But at this point in time, one survey that was out was, what do you do in through here? 57% of the producers are storing corn for higher prices, 10% using DP, 7% over-the-counter products, and 26% are selling for their cash grain across the scale. So there's a large percentage of the producers still want to store this stuff and hang on for some higher prices, Todd.
You think that's a good idea?
Well, you get everybody leaning one way, it could be a challenge.
I will leave it at that, and we'll talk with you again soon. How about that? Thanks so much.
All right, take care, Todd.
That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and will join us on stage at the Farm Assets Conference along with six other commodity analysts to talk about corn and soybeans. We'll have several ag economists from the University of Illinois, and Eric Snodgrass will be there to take a look at the weather. You should, too, willag.org or farmassetsconference.com to buy your tickets, $35, or at 800-898-1065. In today's agricultural news, we'll start here in the home state. Farmers in Illinois can move more grain in every truckload for the next about 45 days, actually 44 now. The state, for the first time ever, has declared a harvest emergency. This is because rain has slowed the fall harvest. Governor Bruce Rauner made the announcement yesterday, allowing each truck to carry 10% more weight.
As of today, for 45 days, farmers can get a permit very easy online. With the Department of Transportation, and the Department of Transportation, I just hung up with Randy Blankenhorn an hour ago. He said they're all ready to go. permitting process, ready to set. They can turn it around immediately. And everybody who needs to get the permit to increase their weight load gets ready to go. So all the farmers around the state, go ahead. You've got expanded capability. You can get 10% more weight in your trucks. Let's get the products to market and support our farmers.
Under a new law, Rauner signed August 11th, the declaration permits drivers of trucks carrying agricultural commodities over state highways to obtain a free permit to exceed gross vehicle weight limits by 10%. Further, local authorities may waive the permit requirements at their discretion. More information is available at truckpermits.illinois.gov. Now let's move from harvest to the international scene, where Robert Lighthizer, the trade representative for the United States, is saying Made in China 2025 is a threat to the global system. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, in an interview that aired Friday, tore into Chinese industrial policies aimed at dominating global high-tech industries and promised to use every tool available to defend American workers and farmers against unfair foreign trade practices. Made in China 2025 is a very, very serious challenge, not just to us, but to Europe, Japan, and the global trading system, Lighthizer told Fox News host Laura Ingraham. They want to be on top of all the high-tech, all the cutting-edge economic areas, and it's smart for them to do it. I mean, they're doing something that's in their interest and that they should do. The veteran trade litigator, who is traveling with President Donald Trump on all five legs of his Asia trip this week, said the U.S. needs to defend itself against Chinese practices with the same amount of vigor, because it's very hard to find any firm in the U.S. tech industry that's not potentially adversely affected by this. The president, for his part, apparently is prepared to use the WTO to challenge Chinese trade practices, or to act unilaterally when he has to, says Lighthizer. Part of the whole trade idea, the whole public contract, is that we give fair trade in return for open markets. Lighthizer, who has tangled with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in recent weeks over the administration's goals for revamping NAFTA, also seemed to blame the huge trade deficit on policies the business group has promoted for decades. "We have," he says, "exactly the same objective as the Chamber of Commerce. All I'm saying is let's try a different route for a little bit. The result of their way, I would suggest, is a $750 billion goods deficit and an overall goods and services deficit of $500 billion. Here's the reality," he says. "The president wants efficient markets. The president wants open, fair, reciprocal, balanced trade. But we don't have it," says Lighthizer. "Everybody," he thinks, "knows that. So the question is, what do you do? Do you buy a rabbit's foot, cross your fingers, make the sign of the cross, or do you have a strategy," says Lighthizer, "where you're going to use every tool that America has to ensure that our workers and our farmers get a fair shake?" So that's a bit of commentary of sorts, but it is from the trade representative for the United States, Robert Lighthizer. Let's stay with trade for the moment, but we'll turn to NAFTA, where the president is often cited as saying withdrawing from the North American Free Trade Agreement would be a way to reduce America's trade deficit with Mexico. However, a Forbes.com article says that isn't the way it works. If the U.S. should no longer be involved in NAFTA, all three countries revert to most favored nation trade status under the World Trade Organization. In order to join the WTO, each country had to agree to limit tariffs to a certain level. The average U.S. tariff on imports from non-FTA countries is 2.8%. The World Bank says Mexico's average tariff is 4.5%. If freed from NAFTA, the president could increase tariffs on Mexican imports to help reduce the imbalance. However, WTO rules require the U.S. to also raise tariffs by an equal amount on all of its other trading partners. From the international arena, we'll come back to domestic politics. A leading Senate tax writer expects full repeal of the estate tax in the Senate GOP version of tax reform legislation after House tax authors took a different path. Senior Senate finance member and former chairman Chuck Grassley expects committee Republicans to opt for a full repeal of the estate tax versus just an increase in the exclusion. The House GOP proposes a phasing in of repeal over 6 years, but Grassley seems to suggest Senate tax writers might seek a more immediate repeal versus a higher exemption.
As of right now, they are not moving in that direction, but if they had to move in that direction, it'll be one of the last decisions that the Finance Committee members are working. And I'm not even looking at what the House might do on this subject, because we're going to end up with some differences from the House, and those will have to be worked out.
And driving home the point, Grassley adds,
but I think we've concluded that we're not going to negotiate among ourselves. And what you're suggesting would be negotiating among ourselves. So right now, it's for repeal.
Grassley also warns of coming up short on middle-class tax relief if some GOP lawmakers insist on restoring tax breaks that have been proposed to be reduced. And finally today, we'll come right back here to Illinois, where despite a scare in mid-August, the 2017 pumpkin crop is looking good. Not the jack-o'-lantern type, although those did well too, but the kind used for pumpkin pie filling, says University of Illinois Extension's Mohammed Babadoust.
Illinois is far ahead of any other state in the nation.
Babadoust has been tasked with a lot of the research that goes into making sure the crop stays healthy all season long. He's a plant pathologist for University of Illinois Extension and says although there was a time in mid-August that made things look a little iffy, getting that news out to farmers about what to do and a good end of the season put the fall classic right back on track. And that means there will be plenty of pumpkin pie filling for the holiday season all around the nation, courtesy of Illinois farmers. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, let's check in now very quickly with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. The manager, Brian Stark, is on the phone line with us. I bet it's not so busy there today.
No, it's a little slow with the rain we had yesterday, but believe it or not, there's actually a handful of guys who are close to getting finished and think they can get back in the field this afternoon.
They must have some tracks. I had 2 inches at the house there in Muhammad. I know there wasn't quite that much. In your draw area, how close are folks actually being to done?
I would say there's probably about 5% left of corn harvest. And with the weather looking clear this week, I expect most people should hopefully be able to wrap things up by the end of the week.
Will that take pressure off the marketplace?
At least in our area, it might from a basis perspective. We've already started to see, from the processor level, corn basis start to creep higher. And I imagine as the clock moves closer to December, that's a natural transition that happens. But as far as the overall progress here this afternoon for the Corn Belt, we'll just have to see how much is left west of the Mississippi for how long that's going to maintain pressure from a basis perspective across the Corn Belt.
How do you see things unfolding for the next, I don't know, 2 months?
I think choppy range-bound trade is probably to be expected. Seasonally, the market tends to rally around Thanksgiving, so you might get a little bit of bump in the corn market, but with the supply and the critical USDA report out Thursday this week, most people think that the corn yield's probably going to move up a little bit, with the bean yield potentially moving a little bit lower. And I think that's, you saw a little bit of resemblance of that trade positioning today, where corn being unchanged to slightly lower and beans being a little higher. So I think that's how the trade's going to position here ahead of the report. And to me, that means corn is kind of in a no man's land, moving around its pivot point of 350 December futures.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us today.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That's Brian Stark. He is with the Andersons. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. Let's check the weather forecast now. Mark Russo is with us. He's from Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Can you take a look back over the last couple of weeks, or maybe just the last couple of days, depending on what you've got in front of you, and give me an idea how much precipitation the eastern part of the Corn Belt has accrued?
Well, certainly totals are running above normal across much of the eastern Corn Belt. Unfortunately, I don't have all the specifics right here in front of me, but certainly with some of the storm activity over the past, not only weekend, but over the past week, we've seen rainfall amounts ranging anywhere from half to 1 inch on the lighter side to some areas picking up over 3 or 4 inches of rain. And primarily Illinois and points east across Indiana and Ohio, southern Michigan's been involved with that too. And overall, much of the eastern Corn Belt has been the recipient of higher rainfall totals, which again is quite a big difference from what happened back in September and August.
And during that time frame, what's happened in the western Corn Belt?
It has been less active here. It hasn't been as active as what we've seen in the eastern Corn Belt. and for areas such as Iowa, down into Missouri, and even into Nebraska, rainfall has been more limited. Up north, though, some of the precipitation has been in the form of snow in places like the Dakotas and Minnesota due to some of the colder air intrusions that we've seen mixed with the precip in recent weeks.
The next 5 to 10 days?
Well, the highlight is really the unseasonably cool weather that looks to persist this week. So expect overall below normal temperatures. However, don't expect that to last. As we look out into next week, it does look like temperatures will start moderating and we start to return to normal, even especially across the southern Midwest, warmer than normal temperatures. There'll still be this progression of frontal systems and thus rain systems about every few days or so. So as a result, still this active pattern looks in the eastern belt looks to continue as we move through this early to middle part of November.
Any concerns in South America today?
Absolutely not, Todd. South America continues to be in good shape with no red flags seen at the present time. Some of the drier areas up north in Brazil, that's beginning to improve with some of the rain activity in recent days and more on the way coming up. And even in southern Brazil, Argentina, upcoming rains close to normal for this time of year, not enough to bog down planting progress.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois.